Megan, I have been using our sponsor Element, that's L-M-N-T, to boost my hydration for over a month now, and I'm really loving it. I'm just not very good at drinking plain water, and I love the taste when I pop one of these little packets, I like orange or grapefruit, into a big bottle of water. It's kind of fruity and salty, and it just helps me hydrate better overall.
Element is a zero-sugar electrolyte drink mix born from the growing body of research that shows the best health outcomes occur with higher sodium levels. Each little pack delivers a significant dose of electrolytes, but minus sugar, artificial colors, and other iffy ingredients. Element's flavors are so unique, like fruity watermelon salt and spicy sweet mango chili. And we're going to set our listeners up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite.
Right. You can receive a free Element sample pack containing 8 flavors with any drink mix purchase when you purchase through our custom link, drinkelement.com/momhour. That's DRINKELMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership and is available for both new and returning customers. And if you're an Element insider, you'll have first access to Element Sparkling, a bold can of sparkling electrolyte water. Again, it's drinklmnt.com/momhour.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Mom Hour. I'm Sarah Powers, and I'm here with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
So happy Sunday, guys.
Happy Sunday.
This is one of our More Than Mom episodes. We do these every couple of weeks, and they are all over the map in terms of topic. And Megan, I'm a little afraid. I don't even know what we're talking about today. You planned it.
This is the best. I love this because the More Than Mom episodes I'm supposed to kind of be in control of, and sometimes I let Sarah know what we're talking about, and sometimes I just like to, you know, I know that you like to be in control of things and you like to know what you're getting yourself into. Today, you really don't. So this is going to be a little bit different from other More Than Moms we've done, in that we're not going to talk about like pop culture or hair products or whatever, although those are very fun, but we're going to be talking about the lives we didn't lead.
Ooh.
So yeah. So the crazy thing about life is like, we seem to have all these endless choices, right? But then every choice you make, if you've seen the movie Sliding Doors with mm-hmm. Gwyneth Paltrow, where in one life she has short hair and in the other life she has long hair.
For example.
And then I also think in one life she dies and the other one she doesn't. But that's, I don't mean to give a spoiler of a 30-year-old movie, but you know. So as we know, one choice can lead to a path that leads you to another choice. And through that process, like, other outcomes are eliminated, which is difficult for someone like me to accept, but it is true. There are lives I will never lead. So now, and in a couple of days, we're actually going to be talking in our regular Tuesday episode, we're going to be talking about FOMO,
yeah,
fear of missing out, as it relates to motherhood, which is kind of related, right? Like, this is fear of missing out on a life that, like, literally the choice that you're about to make is going to take you down a path and you're not going to go.
Yeah. Well, and if I'm not mistaken, we have already missed out on these lives, right? Like, we're looking right back now.
We're looking back. These lives is done.
Yeah.
I suppose if you feel like, you know, like throwing me, you know, under the bus a little bit, you could propose a future. If, like, let's just see how this goes.
I mean, that feels way too unpredictable.
I know. But like, just by the fact that right now, Sarah, we are sitting here, it is 1 o'clock on a Friday, my time. We're sitting here recording. That means I'm not doing something else.
That's true. The other Megan with short hair or long hair? Does the other Megan have short hair or long hair?
Well, it would have been difficult for her to go. She could have gone to get a haircut. That's what the other Megan could be doing right now, is getting a haircut. That would literally change my life forever. So anyways, what we're going to do is I am going to propose some different periods of our lives and say, had you done this other thing?
Okay.
Where do you think, and you, this is fantasy, like, it can be anything. And the fun thing, I think, is just, it's harmless. It's just harmless fun because we're not wishing away our lives.
No.
I'm very happy with my life. I don't wish any part of it away, even the hard stuff. But I do think it's interesting to think about a series of these small choices, where they've led us, and then to think about, like, wow, what would have happened if I'd had more kids or fewer kids?
Yeah.
What would have happened if I had gone to college in a different place or something like that? So
I love it.
Sarah, are you ready to play?
I am.
Megan, the end of the school year and kickoff to summer is a busy time of the year for families, but we can all eat stress-free and hit our wellness goals with ready-to-eat meals from our sponsor, Factor.
Factor's delicious meals are never frozen and can be ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can pick from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular choices like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Plus, they have more than 60 add-ons like breakfast, lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you fueled all day long.
So our team was comparing notes recently on our favorite Factor meals, and Katie loved the herb-crusted chicken with mashed cauliflower and toasted almond green beans. I loved that one too. And get this, so did her little boy, Charlie. She heated it up for lunch one day, and Charlie, who's 3, ate almost all of the green beans. I mean, that's quite an endorsement, right?
I was going to say, what a parenting win. And I get it, Charlie. Those green beans are crazy good. And if you really want to treat yourself, they even have meals with filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Listeners, head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code MOMHOUR50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MOMHOUR50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Okay, Megan, like many of our listeners, I'm sure I've been doing some spring cleaning in my closet lately, and it always feels so good to get rid of clothes I'm not wearing, things that don't fit or that aren't my style anymore. But you know what I realized? All of my Vionic shoes are always in the keep pile. They just tick all the boxes. They're cute, comfy, high quality. They last forever. And I love growing my Vionic collection, especially with the latest styles from their Vionic Vitals collection.
The Vionic Vitals collection offers daily wear styles designed for elegance, comfort, and versatility. We both love the Uptown Loafer, which collapses flat, so it's perfect for travel. The Chardonnay Heeled Sandal, which I know you love, Sarah. The Walk 23 Classic Sneaker, which our team member Katie gets compliments on all the time. And the Willa slip-on flat, one of my favorites, which comes in 12 colors for any outfit.
Yeah, I need to get the Willa slip-on flat. That's next on my list. Well, listeners, if you're ready to try the shoes we're always raving about, use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's one-time use only. Vionic shoes, wearable well-being for your feet.
All right, Megan, I'm nervous, but I'm ready.
Okay, can I just ask you, Sarah, on a scale of 1 to 10, how uncomfortable is this making you?
I mean, well, let's be honest. Like, I'm safe in my house doing my job. So, like, at a fundamental level, I'm totally fine. But as it relates to how we usually record the podcast and how prepared I am for the questions, yeah, I'm pretty uncomfortable. I love it.
All right, good. I like getting you on edge sometimes.
I trust you completely. And I think this will be really fun.
Okay. Well, I'll go first to prime the pump so that we can kind of see, like, you can kind of see how I approach it, and you can approach it totally differently if you want to. But so the first question is, instead of going to fill in the blank college and majoring in blank, if you had totally done a different, you know, like gone to a different college and majored in another thing, what, you know, what might have happened? So I'm going to go first. I went to a state university called Western Michigan University. I majored in business. Then later I switched to English. The entire time I wished I'd gone to a smaller school and majored in theater. Mm-hmm. I did eventually end up transferring to a smaller school and majoring in theater, but that was like after I already had kids. And I never finished, by the way. I didn't finish any of my, I think I have like 105 credits, but at this point, why? Mm-hmm. Like at this point, but let's just pretend I had gone to a small liberal arts college someplace in the Midwest and I had majored in theater.
Okay.
So here is my, the life I think I probably would have wound up with, just being completely fantasy.
Okay.
So I think I probably would have done tons of theater in my early 20s.
Okay.
I think I would have held on to some dreams of going to Broadway. I think ultimately I would have realized it wasn't for me. Like I might have tried New York City, and I didn't actually ever make it to New York till I was in my 20s, and I love it. But to me, it's always felt like a place, even like the first time I got there, I thought, I love this place. I love the energy. I don't want to live here.
Yeah, that's like, exactly how I feel about New York.
It's like it's a visit, not a stay, right? So I think I'd have realized that. And I think I'd have also realized that while I love theater, like I just don't quite, there's a mix of like raw talent, drive to make it specifically in theater and to do whatever it takes to make that your life. And I don't think I have that mix. I just think I might have dabbled. Maybe if I'd lived like in Chicago or something, I might have tried to kind of make a go of it. But I think it would have really depressed me to like move to a big city like Hollywood or New York specifically to make it as an actor and then not make it. I think I would have probably found ways to not do that. Like, I think I would have just kept getting into other things that would have kept kicking that can down the road or like pushing that dream off. And I ultimately wouldn't have done it. I think I would have probably still kind of wound up where I am now, where I would be working performance and music into my life in various ways, but probably not as a career. And I think I probably would have still had kids young. I bet you I would have like married like a struggling musician or like someone in the scene. And then we would probably have still had kids in our 20s because what else are you going to do anyway? You're poor anyway. And then who knows? I might have like very similar life to what I have now. Like when I think about that path,
yeah,
I don't think it would be wildly different from where I wound up. Okay, so now are you ready to play?
Yeah, my turn.
Okay, so instead of going to Northwestern,
I'm majoring in English. Okay. Those are the two things I did. Okay, I'm torn because I have like two alternatives.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Okay.
Go with both of them. I want to hear both.
Okay, so one is that I go to an elite school on the East Coast, which I really thought I wanted to do. Northwestern is an elite school as well by many standards, but it is in the Midwest, which makes it a little bit different. I had my eye on several schools in Boston, Harvard and Tufts in particular. And so if I had ended up there, I swear I still would have majored in English. But let's say for the sake of this conversation that I get more on a track of like toward business. I think there's a good likelihood that I would have probably gone to grad school and gotten either a law degree or an MBA, especially if I was sort of surrounded by people who were doing those things. It's likely that at those two schools, I would not have danced. I would not have kept up with dance as much as I was able to at Northwestern. And so dance would have probably phased out and either I wouldn't have done it at all, or it would have been downgraded to a hobby instead of almost upgraded to like a first career like it was. So then if I'm not dancing and I'm going to grad school, I could definitely see like meeting someone in either an MBA or a law program. I could definitely see going into a more traditional, like corporate first job. But the funny thing is, like you said, when you play that out to like age 26, 27, I want to say I still would have wanted to start a family. I still probably would have wanted to have a different work-life balance when I had little kids. So maybe I would have figured out like a part-time flex schedule. I can definitely see myself thriving in a high power corporate or law. I'm not sure I would have wanted to be an attorney, but I did at one point like the idea of going to law school, nonprofit, like that whole thing. I think there's like a whole thing that Sarah could have done that would have involved wearing suits. And probably I would have met someone who was also very driven. The funny thing is, like, my husband now is very driven and very successful. But when I met him, he was an art major who like didn't do anything. And so it's so funny. Like you end up, he didn't, he would admit that. I'm not just being mean. He slept till 2 o'clock every day and like temped and, you know, like I must have seen something in him, but he was not a driven individual. And it's so
he wasn't complete yet.
No. Yeah. I needed that probably. So, okay. So that's kind of one path. But I also, there is definitely a path where I went to Berkeley. And I love Berkeley. And at Berkeley is a huge, huge, big, big school. And it's, I think I would have grown up quicker and like been a little scrappier on my own. My friends who went to Berkeley, they were living in apartments and like, it's just a little bit gritty. And like the university is really well known and has great academics, but it's more like being a grown up. When I would go visit my friends at Berkeley, I felt like I was going to summer camp at Northwestern with dorms and RAs and people who looked out for you. And my friends at Berkeley were like grown ups. They were like 18, 19, biking around the city and, you know, living in apartments. And it just felt very like grown up is the only way I can think of it. So I probably would have kind of been a little scrappier, grown up a little quicker. I'm trying to think like still would have majored in English. That's the part I'm having trouble with.
Like, so there's no part of you that like, cause for me, I will say like when we, you know, are going to be talking about FOMO, one form of FOMO that I had big time going into college was if I chose this path, I can't choose that. And so for me, choosing a major was
hard,
a constantly moving target and very difficult.
So, and I knew I wanted to major in English from midway through high school, and I never changed my mind. The one thing I did, and this could have played out, is I went down a path of a creative writing concentration at Northwestern, and I got accepted into a creative writing, like, it was like a sub program within the English department, and it was really hard to get into, and I got all the way into it and did all the prerequisites and decided I didn't want to be a poet. So that's another whole thing. Like, what if I was a poet?
I dabbled with becoming a poet.
Yeah.
I would have also been awful.
Yeah.
So, but there was never any part of you that wanted to like teach English or like be a college professor in English. That wasn't the path you wanted to be on.
By the time I was entrenched in English departments, I pretty clearly saw that's not what I wanted to do. I spent my junior year abroad at Oxford, and that killed any remaining desire to be in academia.
I've never been interested in academia
yeah,
either.
It just felt like it's so such a bubble. And now, mm-hmm. you know, but the funny thing is, if you'd asked me that in like 9th or 10th grade, I would have been all in on being like patches on my elbows. Like, I don't know if that's like a manly English professor, but like, you know what I mean? I wanted all of it. I wanted all of the literary cachet of being an English professor. But once I got into an English department, I was like, meh, no.
Well, okay, let's talk about that really quick, because I also had a time of my life where I had this like fantasy about academia. And I think it was because I had this probably from watching like that movie with Robin Williams in it or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Dead Poets Society. Yeah.
Yes. I think I had this sort of romance about being a learned person around other learned people and immersing myself in a topic and just being like the smartest person there could ever be on this very specific kind of literature or whatever it was, right? And I think what ended up, I think what I kind of, and I held on to that into my 20s. I did think about going back to college after, maybe after Isaac was born, and I had already gone back to school, and I thought maybe I could just take this all the way. Like maybe I was doing really well in school, and I thought maybe I could just ride this path out. It felt like something I could do that I could be good at, and that I would be interested in. And honestly, the reason I decided not to is I was in a couple of forums back then, message boards with moms in academia, and they talked about how hard it was to be a mom and to be in academia. And then I also kind of got a peek behind the curtain of like what it really means to be in academia. Yeah. And it wasn't just sitting around chatting with really smart people all the time, turns out.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of politics and a lot of, it sounded like a lot of backstabbing. Like it sounded like a pressure cooker that I did not think I would thrive in. So I didn't decide to do it. Was that kind of why for you?
Or I think so. I think if you'd asked me, what I loved the most was being in a room with other people. And I loved the feeling of talking about literature. I loved it from high school on. And I thought if I could do that forever, take a poem or a piece of text or Shakespeare or a novel and be in a room with not people who are just talking to hear themselves talk, but who
there's a lot of that too.
There's a lot of that. And I think that's one thing you'd get burnout about. Yeah. But really to be able to solve, I looked at literature like people look at a math problem. Like to me, it was so interesting to go deep and dive in. I probably would have been really happy, honestly, being like an AP high school English teacher. That's where you could do that thing. Just read great works, talk about them with smart people and not have to do the rest of academia. So yeah, I mean, I think it was a lot of things, but I just think I loved being a student of English literature, and I just never saw a path for being a professor of one.
Yeah. And I think for me that like hearing you talk about that, the other thing that I have is a general impatience. Like I like ideas and concepts to a certain point, but then I want to like take the idea or concept and do something with it, like act on it or change something with it.
Yeah.
And like having the whole point be
just talking about it,
just the fact that it exists.
Yeah.
And like just the discussion and like dissection of that, I think would have driven me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a dissertation, I think. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just thinking
about
that.
That's another thing that turned me off is I am very intimidated. You know this about me. I'm very intimidated by big projects where I can't see the end. So the idea of even a master's thesis, let alone a PhD, never excited me. It always was like, I don't want to do that. I'd rather write 10 page papers for the rest of my life than do a thesis or a dissertation. Isn't that funny? I'm a scaredy cat.
No, I don't think so. I think that's not being afraid. That's like, there is a level of nerdery.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will say, I've said this sentence, this level of nerdery I do not wish to participate in. And that's, I think, what it is. Like, you have to be so in love with that topic and that topic to the exclusion of all other things.
Yeah.
For a pretty long period of time. Like, when people are working on a master's thesis or a dissertation, they're not doing other stuff. Like, they don't have brain space for that, right? So that would be difficult for me. Yeah. I think I'm too much of a butterfly. So this is really interesting. Like, this took us down a whole rabbit hole that I didn't anticipate, which is why this is fun. Okay, are you, do you feel like you covered everything?
Yeah, I'm moving on. I'm not a poet.
Okay, you're not a poet, turns out. Okay, so now the next scenario are going to be a place that you left, pretend you never left. And I think I'm going to hit two and I'll hit them pretty quick.
Okay.
And I'll go first in this and then maybe for part two, you can go first both times. Okay. Okay. So for mine, okay. So just to give you the, to set it up, I live in a small town, a small city in Michigan, about 30 minutes from the same small town that I graduated high school from.
Okay.
So my life is not that much different than it was when I was in high school. It's, the two towns are pretty different for how close together they are, but still it's small town Michigan. I've lived in Michigan almost my entire life. So the two that I chose were the two, the most outside of the norm for me. And that was Nashville. I lived there when Jacob was born. He was born there. Very different. And Minneapolis.
Okay.
And I lived there when Jacob and Isaac were little. Isaac, we moved there when Isaac was like 6 weeks old. So no, I take that back. We moved there when Isaac was like 6 days old. What am I thinking? Okay. So I'll start with Nashville. So I actually really loved Nashville. Like, I loved the topography of it. I thought it was a physically very beautiful place. The people were very friendly. And what was cool about Nashville is it's such a melting pot. It's really not, like, not everybody has a Southern accent. Like, everybody is there to do something else in the kind of the way I assume, like, LA is. Like, you're a server, but you're also, you know, a singer.
Yeah,
or trying to get into the biz. So it's cool. It's like this cool blend of people from all over the place. And at that time, I was actually really into country music. So I think I probably would have ended up trying to get into the music business. I don't think I would have wanted to be a singer. I think I would have, again, just like with the Broadway thing, I think I would have held on to that fantasy for a little bit and then realized I probably didn't want to do the things, like I wasn't cut out to do the things that it would require to do. But I think that I would have probably gotten into performing in some way. And I think I probably would have tried to get into some kind of creative aspect of the first job I ever applied for was as Reba McEntire's personal assistant.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I didn't get an interview, but this was when I was like the first real job. I was at college and my brothers at the time lived in Nashville and I got on this website. It was like a job site because I was going to go down there for the summer. And then I started fantasizing. I'm like, what if I just left Michigan and lived there?
Yeah.
And then I got on this website and it was like a play on Yahoo. And I think it was like Yoohoo or something, but it was like a Nashville job board. And I found this job that was like Reba McEntire's personal assistant. And I applied for it.
That's amazing.
So yeah. And I remember that very clearly, like thinking, what if I got that job? That would be amazing. So I think I still probably would have had a big family, probably not as many kids as I wound up with, because I think I might have wound up in a more corporate job down there. I just feel like I would have gotten into a job that would have kept me really busy. And I think that would have been a very, very different life. It's like the most different of any of the other things I can visualize would be had I stayed there. So it's kind of fun to think about.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, I am not Reba McEntire's personal assistant and I don't do anything in the music business. So that didn't happen. Then there's Minneapolis. I lived in Minneapolis for pretty, like maybe, we lived there for maybe 6 months. And then we moved away. Then we came back for like a year or something like that. So it was about a year and a half all told.
Okay.
And I loved Minneapolis. It's definitely like the largest city in Minnesota. It's not a huge city, but it's big enough. It's got everything. It's got like not as big as Chicago. It's got a lot of live theater.
I've been to Minneapolis downtown like three different times. So I have a pretty good sense of the city. And every time I went, it was good weather. So I always joke that like in my mind, it's always like 72 degrees there. But it's a great city. I mean, it has
it's
everything.
Very neat.
Like Portland.
Yeah, it's got everything.
Portland's like that too. It has, it feels very urban, even though it's not huge.
Yeah, it reminds me in a way, it reminds me of that vibe. So I really liked it there. I really loved it. It had this, I kind of at the time was in my most hippie mom phase. Mm-hmm. So I sort of had this very crunchy group of artsy friends. Mm-hmm. And I think I could have seen myself then, if I lived there, going down this very bookish, creative writer direction. I was already kind of getting there. Like in those days, everything I wrote was, I was just writing essays all the time. And like, I think I really could have seen myself going down a writerly path there that was mm-hmm. different than the writerly path I wound up on. Mm-hmm. And I think I probably, you know, might have ended up living like in a two flat someplace in like the downtown area by the little chain of lakes down there. I mean, it's a really cool city. It's accessible and mm-hmm. small enough that I feel like it's easy to get around, easy to meet people. It's not as overwhelming as like Chicago was yeah. for me. Chicago was very overwhelming for me. So I think that I probably would have been very happy there and then just kind of miserable in the winter, but what else yeah. is new?
Okay. Well, I will do Chicago. That kind of makes the most sense. So I went to Northwestern, as we've discussed. After graduation, I moved to the city, and I think I was there 2.5 years, and then Brian and I moved to Arizona. We were engaged when we moved. And so one of the biggest differences is, first of all, we moved kind of suddenly and before any of our friends were moving out of the city and settling down by years, really. So yeah. I almost feel like our young 20s in the city was sort of cut short, not in a bad way. I mean, we followed good jobs and anyway, but I think we would have had kids later. So I'll just, in this scenario, I'll say that Brian and I are together because we were. So if we had stayed in the city, we would have stayed in very much like 20s, in our 20s, living in Bucktown with the cutest ground level apartment with like an exposed brick wall. It was tiny, but I loved it. So I think we just would have like thrived for longer and probably had kids later. Now, the other interesting thing to think about is I was dancing professionally at that time, and I had started to like halftime work as a corporate writer from home for what was at the time my dad's company. And I would have wanted to transition out of dancing at some point. The move to Arizona made it really easy because I kind of just did it cold turkey. I just quit. If we'd stayed, I would have been dancing longer. So I would have probably danced for a few more years. And then I would have had to figure out what, if not dance, what else do I want to do? Do I want to write? Do I want to go back to grad school? So I think many things would be the same, but I think what would be different is I think we would have had kids later and stayed in the city longer, like many of our friends did. And we would have been kind of part of this very like Midwest post-college experience of like, you know, I mean, I'm sure you knew people who moved to Chicago. Everybody moves to Chicago. I happen to only go to school like 12 miles outside, but people from Wisconsin and Indiana, everybody moves to Chicago. And like,
you would have been very much in the same milieu of people that I currently know that I hang out with when I go to Chicago, because that's their life. They're all that. They all became friends because they were that post-college group that didn't leave. And now they all have kids, but it's like, they all kind of went through these stages at the same time.
Yeah. And they're probably my age, right? Aren't they in like their late 30s, but they have babies. So that's like, that's the part that I think is really different is I think we would have stayed in that. Because once we moved to Arizona, we just were like grownups. We had a house and we had a baby, and Arizona people tend to start families younger. So I think that would have been the big difference. One more thing I'll say, and then we need to take a break, is I had a real chip on my shoulder about the Chicago suburbs, and we have many listeners in the Chicago suburbs, and I love you guys. And I have since kind of changed my tune because I live a very suburban life now, and I see the benefits of having your burb. But at the time when I was living in the city and I would go out and I'd teach dance in a bunch of different suburbs, and I thought, this is going to be so mean, but I thought, I will live in Chicago as long as possible, but I am never moving to the suburbs. I was
everybody thinks that, Sarah. That is not okay. So everybody I know who lives in Chicago or has lived in Chicago has in their 20s and early 30s been like, I would never live in the suburbs. Like, no way. Like, those people who have kids and move to the suburbs are so lame, blah, blah, blah. And then they have kids, and then they realize it's really hard to do the city with kids. It just is. Like, and I lived in Chicago for a year with kids, and then moved because I didn't want to live in the suburbs, not because they were suburbs necessarily, but because it was still so expensive and inconvenient to live in the suburbs the way we were doing life at the time that I was like, I'm just moving to Michigan. Yeah. I mean, I'm only 90 minutes away. It's not that much further. I might as well just be where my family is and not pay all this money still like not be able to keep up. Right. But like, everybody thinks that, and most people still end up in the suburbs.
Yeah, and I think the other thing for me is I grew up in a mid-sized city that doesn't really have suburbs, so I was very unfamiliar with this idea that you have your thriving city, and then it just expands like a spider web, and the farther away you go, like, the farmier it gets, but otherwise it's just this, it's almost like Chicago's the focus and everything else is a commuter town. And now I realize that's not really how it is, but because I just grew up in a mid-sized city that where didn't work like that.
Right.
So like I didn't, you have, there's neighborhoods and stuff, but not city suburb dynamics. And I think I found it very foreign and I thought, well, I would just move somewhere else. I wouldn't move to the suburbs. And so now I say that and I love all of Chicagoland.
Well, what really suburb is such a missed opportunity. It's a city. It's a small city that functions on its own, that is adjacent to a larger city where more people work, but not necessarily. But you can live in a suburb and that can be the hub of your life. Like it's not like you're in the suburb, like longingly looking over at the skyline thinking, gosh, I wish I was in Chicago right now. I mean, no, I don't think that's the way it works. No. And now that I've been removed in long enough, when I go into Chicago, I'm like, that was great. I'm glad to go. Like, I'm glad to leave now because people who live in Chicago don't leave their neighborhoods that much because who wants to deal with the traffic and who wants to deal with all that stuff? So we all have these perceptions about the way that stuff plays out when we're not in it.
Yeah. And I was very, very naive. So,
Yeah, it just makes sense. Okay. I have one more question for you. Then I know we have to go to a break.
Okay.
Do you think had you stayed in Chicago, is there any chance you would have continued dancing? Like, would you have taught? Could you have seen that being a big part of your life? Or were you at some point just kind of ready to be done with that as a profession or a...
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. So here's how I'll answer it. When I left, I was almost 25, just like a month shy of turning 25. And I was starting to get burned out on just where my place in the dance world was. I was never going to be in the Joffrey Ballet. I was making money. I was in small companies. I was hustling and I was doing other things to make money. And I was getting a little bit tired of that. And to be really honest, I was wanting a little bit more intellectual. I wanted my brain to get an exciting career, not just my body. And so I didn't really want the career path that like my mentor and teacher has still, I mean, to this day, she remains like a dance teacher and choreographer as her main career. She owns a house. She has a kid. Like it's not, she doesn't have a side hustle. That is her career. That's and her it thing, pays yeah. her a full, she's been on faculty at the university. So it could have been a career. It didn't seem like it was going to be my career. But what I loved was I loved the people. So that would have been interesting to see how I might have made dance and the culture of dance stay in my life, even if it wasn't the career path, because choosing another career would have meant a lot less time to go to class. So that would have been interesting. I lost touch with a lot of people. It was a few years before Facebook. And so I lost touch with a lot of people that I was really close with in those years. And then because there wasn't really social media, by the time there was social media, I don't know. I just never found them and friended them. So I can think of 6 or 8 people I was really close with and I have no idea what they're doing or if they're still dancing or, you know, that's a sliding doors moment. Like what their life is like. They probably have kids, but they might be a full-time dance teacher. Like, so
maybe one of them is listening right now.
Hey,
come say hello to us.
Okay, Megan. Well, over here at the Mom Hour, we are big fans of our sponsor, Our Place. In fact, you, me, and our team member, Katie, were all comparing notes on our favorite product. Katie was telling us that even though she's packing up to move her family to a new house, she cannot put that mini perfect pot from Our Place into the boxes yet because she's using it like every night.
Well, as someone who also has a perfect pot, I got mine as part of their mini home cook duo set. I get it. It's nonstick, which is key, but it also has all these handy features like a steam release lid with a built-in strainer and this nice beechwood spoon that nests on the handle in this perfect little peg.
Okay, well, I didn't get this pot, but now I want it. That sounds so great. Our Place's cookware is great to cook with, beautiful to look at, and healthier for us as well. All of Our Place's products are made without PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. In addition to their cookware and tableware, Our Place is also making waves with their Wonder Oven, the most stylish all-in-one air fryer and toaster oven. Again, free from the forever chemicals found in many of those air fryers.
Listeners, Our Place offers a 100-day trial with free shipping and returns, and we've got a great deal for you. Go to fromourplace.com and enter the code MOMHOUR at checkout to receive 10% off site-wide. That's from our OURPlace.com code MOMHOUR. Sarah, our sponsor Hiya Health makes a kid's daily multivitamin that parents can feel great about giving their kids because they have no added sugars or dyes. And our kids who have tried Hiya vitamins have loved them, which is important, right? Because what good is a bottle of vitamins that your kid won't take?
Hiya was founded by two dads who didn't like the ingredients label on some of the popular children's vitamins they were seeing on store shelves, so they got to work developing a formula that would help fill the most common nutrient gaps in modern kids' diets. Hiya's chewable kids vitamin is made with a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables and then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals. They're also vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free.
Hiya manufactures their vitamins right here in the USA with globally sourced ingredients, and then they ship their chewable vitamins directly to your door on a pediatrician-recommended schedule. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. You're going to get 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, go to hiyahealth.com/momhour. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to hiyahealth.com/momhour and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
Okay, Sarah, I've got a couple more, and these are very specific to motherhood.
Okay.
Or at least they're very specific to how kids shaped our lives as they are now, I guess. And then I'm going to have you go first.
Okay.
Now. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning of motherhood. I want you to pretend you had kids 5 years earlier than you did. And then when I answer, I'm going to pretend that I had kids 5 years older.
Interesting. Okay, so that would have meant that I got pregnant at 22 and had a baby at 23. So like, we'll pretend like right out of college. Interesting. Okay.
You're like, I don't know. Everything would have been ruined.
No, not at all. I'm just having to think about this. I think I would have probably gone all in on motherhood. Not that I didn't already, but I think because it was at that time in life where you're kind of thinking about like, what's my career? Like, what am I, for me, I'm like, whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to do it really well. So I would think I probably would have just gone all in on motherhood and parenting. I probably, let's assume I would have been able to kind of be a full-time mom, stay at home. I'm just, since this is hypothetical, that's where I'm going with this. I bet I would have had kids close together and a bunch of them, because I love being a mom. I'll assume I would have loved it then. I don't know. Okay, you go. I'm going to say more, but I'm a little stuck.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So for me, because it's interesting because for me, this answer does not move the needle as much as I would have thought.
And like, maybe mine doesn't either. And that's why I'm struggling. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's so interesting is like when I talk to people who will say, wow, you had kids when? And I'll say, well, I was pregnant with my first at 19. He was born when I was 20. Like I wasn't out of college yet, blah, blah, blah. And they'll say things like, I couldn't have never done that. Or the kind of the sort of the underlying assumption or the implication is that it would have completely derailed their lives. And that by association, then I sort of am thinking, oh, so did it completely derail my life? And what's funny is if I had had kids 5 years older, first of all, I wasn't really killing it in life at the age of 19. I was a hard worker. Like I was working a lot. I was kind of like, sort of trying at school. I really wasn't sure why I was in college and like I didn't have a lot of focus there. So I wasn't the best student, but I was working a lot and like, you know, fairly responsible, I guess, for a 19-year-old, but I just didn't really have much going on. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I think I would have kind of frittered those 5 years away. Like, I think I would have been one of those people who spends a lot of time in the bars in their early 20s and dated or just kind of like had a boyfriend that I just hung out with. And I really just don't think I got really serious about life until after I had kids. And I don't think that would have changed for me if I had them later. I think I just would have, I'm not going to say wasted more time, but I wasn't a very intrinsically driven person until after I had kids.
There's not something you would have like filled those 5 years with.
No, I don't feel like I missed out on anything. I think I would have, like I said before, when I was talking about had I gone to a different college and just kind of assumed I didn't have kids super young, I would have probably done a lot of shows. I would have probably dabbled. I would have maybe tried to like make it as an actor. But I think no matter what, I would have wound up kind of coming back to this place where the kids were what kind of flipped that switch for me, or else it would have been flipped by age. Maybe it would have been maturity or something. Because I could have maybe never had kids. So like there's something, you know, there could have been another outcome. I would have had fewer, I think, because I think what I would have done if I had waited 5 years, then I would have started having kids right around the same time as my best friends started having kids. And I think I would have had three, just like Jenna did. Mm-hmm. And then I think I would be done.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I was saying I might have had more.
Yeah.
Just because time, you know.
Yeah. Like that's part of the reason I have five is I had a lot of ramp on.
Yeah.
Ramp.
Another thing I thought of is I've always thought that I had a nice amount of career before I had kids, like not as much as some people, but enough that I felt pretty confident. I feel pretty confident in what I know I'm good at, what types of work environments I do well in. And if I had had kids at 23, I would not have likely have had some of that work experience, which just would have meant, you know, whenever I decided to ramp up a career again or whatever kind of work I went into, I think would have been a little bit more like feeling around in the dark without that kind of foundation knowledge of what kind of work is out there. So I think that would have, I'm sure I would have found my way to fulfilling work, but it might have looked different if I'd raised a bunch of little kids in my early and mid 20s and then got my head out of the sand and had to figure it out as a 30-year-old, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes sense. And I just think what I think is so interesting is where this keeps bringing us is like in the end, life might not have really been that different.
Yeah.
Like we could have had a different spouse. Like most likely had I gone to a different college, I would have had a different partner and same for you or like things like that. But I feel like the things that make us, like those basics of like where we kind of would have taken our lives probably aren't that different.
Mm-hmm.
It just, or maybe it's just that we can't even imagine.
Yeah.
What they would have been.
Yeah.
Okay. So last one.
Okay.
And you're going to go first again.
Okay.
Let's pretend you have two fewer kids than you do. So you're a mom of an only. And then I'm going to pretend I had two more kids than I do.
Ooh, this is like, I almost thought it was a typo when I read it. I was like, wait, no. Yeah. Okay.
I'm taking us to the opposite.
The extremes.
The extremes.
So
and then we could answer the other way too. Like you could also then say, what if you had five and what if I had three?
You're right. That's less interesting because we kind of.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Good job.
Because we have that. Yeah.
You planned this so well. Okay. As a mom of an only, I would be kind of a disaster, I think. I would have two.
That's so funny. Poor Allegra or whichever kid it would be.
Yeah. I would. And that's not to take away from any parents of onlys because it comes with its own like blessings and challenges, I think. But I think I really benefit from seeing the diversity in my kids and having that validate that it's not all within my control. I think a really hard thing for my personality having an only would have been the illusion that this was something I could craft and mold and control to the nth degree. And I think that would have been an interesting dynamic. I might have been more overbearing as a mom. I would hope that I would still, you know, we would still create a great family dynamic and I would still have a great relationship with that child. But I think it would look,
there might be more stress.
There might be more stress and but maybe the flip side. Actually, I did a Voices interview with our friend Karen Walrund about raising an only. And, you know, some of the really cool flip sides is the ability to travel the world with one kid and the kind of singularity of focus you can have to really nurture a kid's passions and their, so there's lots of cool things that kid would, I think it's a really interesting conversation. It is not a better or worse by any means. I just think my personality would have really kind of struggled with what's my role here.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to answer for the only thing too, because I just think it's interesting, especially because it's so different from my reality.
Right.
When you were talking about like the having some, not it, like, it's like having, it's like having control group or something.
Right.
When you have the other kids, you have some comparison. You can go, oh, they're not all like this. I didn't do this to them or whatever it is. And one of my experiences, even with my oldest, is like not really realizing until like Jacob had to get pretty old and the other kids had to get pretty old before I was able to go, oh, so these are the ways in which he's just intrinsically different than them and they're intrinsically different from him. And it has like, it takes a while to see that fruit of whatever it is you've been doing. So I can see how that could create for me. I think I tend to go with the, it'll be fine. Like that's like my default.
Yeah.
But I can see how if your default is to kind of go in the other direction, it could be like, this is wrong.
Right.
This is a problem.
Yeah.
So for me, I think I would have actually been a really good mom of an only. Like, I feel like I would be more organized and just more focused.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have been I think I would be like, I would feel like something was missing or feel a little less, like I like the bustle and I feel like I would have maybe tried to find other things to create mm-hmm. the bustle with. And I don't know what that would have been, but like, I could see that be like me almost taking him out into environments that are like kind of crazy so that I yeah. could get that feeling of activity around us. But I think it actually would have like been really good for him. And mm-hmm. I think I would have figured it out. Mm-hmm. So like, it's funny to think of that's so not the path I went down that it's hard to even think about it. Yeah. But like, I really think it could have been a lot of fun. And yeah. That is one of those like alternate realities that yeah. I go, huh, that would have made like a really big difference in my life. And
yeah.
who knows?
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're going to answer.
Wait, oh, did no, you
I
tell
still
me?
Haven't
yeah,
done,
you have seven
I haven't
kids.
Done mine yet. That's right. I have seven kids. Okay. So this is at the far end, the yeah. furthest extreme from having one. Okay. This could have happened. So I had, you know, the possibility of having children was taken off the table for me at 35. Had that not happened, it is not outside the realm of possibility that I would have had two more kids. I was only 35. And in my family, people stay fertile, like into their 40s.
Yeah. So. Okay. So back up for just a second. Our listeners may not know. So you had a hysterectomy at yeah. 35. You had yep. Clara at 32, right?
Yes.
When Clara yep. Was
Clara, well, 31, I was almost 32.
Okay. Yep. When Clara was say 2 or 3 years old in the, not right after, what would you have said was the likelihood just based on your, you know, desire and, you know, I know you didn't like to plan it all out, but like,
yeah, I think I felt done. I think I could have swayed myself from feeling done.
Okay.
I think there might've come a point when she was like getting close to kindergarten and like, I could have seen myself possibly going, let's keep this party going
mm-hmm.
a little bit longer. Once that was off the table for me, I didn't mourn it too much. And I really never thought about it again. Like it was, you know, that was a done deal. It's not like I was like, oh, I really wish I had had seven kids. Mm-hmm. I just could see there being a life where that would have been something mm-hmm. I wanted. I'm glad I don't, but like, I could see that having happened.
Yeah.
I think as a mom of seven, I would be relationally very similar to how I am now, like how I've been mm-hmm. with my kids. I think I would be sloppier. Mm-hmm. I believe that I was starting to wear out. Like age doesn't help.
Yeah.
The fact that I have so many other things that I want to do. And I had this relatively short window of time where I was fine with putting all those things on hold.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have begun. It wouldn't be the number of kids. It would be the time commitment.
Yeah. It's the longevity of the kid raising.
Yes.
Period.
And I think I would have started to really come up against choices that like, I'm either going to have to really be okay with doing infants a different way than I've ever done them before. Like mm-hmm. I'm going to have to go out of my way to avoid the chaos of having like a house full of kids while I'm and babies and other people's babies and stuff like that. While I'm also trying to like do all this career stuff like
yeah.
that, I think was not going to work. Like there would have come a point where I would have had to like really make some clear choices about how I was going to do motherhood. I'm putting
right.
that in quotes.
Right.
And I know that there are moms with 6 or 7 or more kids who are super organized and have help and like they run it like a business. And mm-hmm. I kind of run it like a not particularly well-run family business and not so much like a corporation. Right. So like that I think would have had
like
to change.
That cafe down by the water that's been there forever.
Right,
like probably makes no money, but they
right,
seem
like,
pretty
the
happy.
The linoleum is all cracked and like the health department, you probably don't want them coming through. Like that would have, I think my life would have gotten sloppy in that way. Or I would have had to make a very clear decision to make it not so. And
that would have looked like yeah. a, like almost like a second phase of motherhood.
Yes.
You hear that a lot with people, with parents of many, many, that yeah. it's almost like two different families. We have a couple of listeners. I just know from Instagram and emails, like we have a couple of listeners with 9 and 10 children. And also our friend Amy Wilson at What Fresh Hell talks a lot about, she's one of 6, but there's like a, I want to say her youngest sibling was born when she was in college, like a huge okay. age gap over the 6 kids. And just families like that, it becomes like families within families, like groupings yeah. within groupings. So, but I think you would have been a great mom of 7.
Oh,
you
well,
could do
you.
It like with your eyes closed.
And it's not outside the realm of possibility that I might have remarried and had kids with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds crazy to even think about, but like, it's not outside the realm of possibility. And then that brings that person to the table and whatever their abilities or resources would have been. You know what I mean? Like that's another whole, because I've been separated, divorced for over 2 years now. So, and I probably could still be cranking. I bet you I'm still cranking out eggs right now. They're just getting lost. They're not going anywhere. But like, you know what I mean? So like that is a possibility.
Yeah.
Which is wild to think about.
That is wild. I have, just as a end cap to this, we're going to talk about FOMO on Tuesday. And this didn't come up in that conversation, but I do look at families of four often. And I have three, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's this, it's not a FOMO. It's this feeling like, well, I could have done that. Like I could have, I was young enough. I think I still had the wherewithal to do it. I wasn't totally worn out yet. Actually, I mean, my third kid was, that was a hard transition to three, but I could have done it. I didn't want to, and I have no regrets about it. But when I see moms of four in particular, like four, you know, little ones or maybe like middle age, like mine are, it's more of like, well, I could have, yeah. You know, it's interesting.
Almost like a little familiarity there. Like I see that, like that could be me.
And I definitely have thought when we've been around families with younger kids, Violet is such a youngest, as you guys know, in our family, that when she's around a toddler or a preschooler, I've just had this like the whole like flash of like, wow, what would it have been like if she wasn't the youngest and if she had a younger? So many things would have been different. So.
Yeah, Clara too, that would rock her world and she would not be pleased.
Yeah, I think actually it would have been good for Violet. So,
yeah.
But
well, Clara and Clara and Violet are very different babies of the family.
Definitely. Definitely.
Very, very different. And so it's interesting to see how that, like to just kind of play it through.
Yeah.
How that might have looked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Huh.
Well, this was really fun.
See, I did good.
You did great. Actually, I think you did. It's almost like you practiced.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was really fun. And yeah, we're just going to wrap up, I guess. You're driving the bus. Are we wrapping up?
Oh, shoot. Yes. I was supposed to fill out that part in the box.
That's okay.
There's like an outline and there's a box that literally says wrap up. And I didn't put anything in that box.
Let's pretend we're in an alternate reality where you did fill out that box. And all it says is we're done.
We're done, guys. Definitely right, guys. Tune in for our episode on Tuesday because I think it'll dovetail nicely with this where we talk about motherhood and FOMO if you're missing out. And we will talk to you soon.
All right.
Guess what, Megan? Over 10,000 teens are already using our sponsor, Erica, to help them unplug.
That is amazing. Erica, that's Erica with a K, is the social media health app for teens that gives them the tools to unplug whenever they need to for improved health, study focus, sleep, and daily balance. It's so cool how this works to hide distracting apps from your phone at the touch of a button, keeping them out of sight and out of mind without deleting your data.
Yeah, you know, teens really get that social media comes with risks, including addiction. And Erica helps them build healthy habits and self-regulation that will benefit them their whole lives. Tell your teens about Erica and save 20% on the Erica family plan with promo code TheMomHour. Go to erica.app and search for plans. That's Erica with a K, Erika.app, and use code TheMomHour to save 20%. The Mom Hour is brought to you by partners like Chatbooks. Chatbooks makes it beyond easy to create beautiful photo books by importing your digital photos from anywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Google Photos, or directly from your phone. The books come in a variety of sizes with beautiful cover options and binding styles to choose from, and they start at just $15. Plus, we have a great deal just for our listeners. Use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20% off your purchase. Just download the Chatbooks app and use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20%.